This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It's been proven over and over again in many countries that when women have access to education, when they get economic and political opportunity, society as a whole benefits. But in much of the Middle East, and in other countries too, empowerment of women is often attacked as an alien Western idea that challenges deeply held religious beliefs and cultural traditions. In her new book, Isabel Coleman describes a different approach to the same end, how some Muslim women employ the Quran as an agent of change in what's called Islamic feminism. She argues that any movement that fails to place religious beliefs at its core is doomed, and she joins us in a moment. We'll also talk with an activist from Afghanistan about the changing role of women there. Later in the program, questions about Jewish bankers and anti-Semitism. Michael Kinsley of The Atlantic joins us. But first, we want to hear from Muslims in the audience and those of you who've been to Afghanistan. Are women's roles changing? How? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Isabel Coleman is also a senior fellow for U.S. Foreign Policy at the Council of Foreign Relations. Her new book is called Paradise Beneath Her Feet, How Women Are Transforming the Middle East. She joins us from their studios in New York City. Nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation today.
Thank you, Neil. It's great to be back.
And let me anticipate some questions from our audience. Some might argue that there are aspects of Islam and some cultural traditions, too, that seem incompatible with equality for women.
I think that that's probably true, that there are aspects, if you read the Christian Bible quite literally, that pose challenges for women. And that's absolutely true of the Quran. There are passages in the Quran that pose challenges for women's rights within Islam. But that doesn't mean that you can't still look at the texts and contextualize them. What many of the men and women today are trying to do within Islam is argue that times change and you have to read them differently. You have to think about them and in the present, not only in the past, and find new meanings and new ways to circle that square.
You describe this as, I think the word is ijtihad. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, ijtihad, which is a legal process that has been within Islam for centuries, which is a process of intellectual reasoning, looking at the text and trying to work with the text to come up with answers to questions that are modern questions that pertain to today and people's very real lives that they live.
There's another school of thought, however, that what's needed to be interpreted in the Quran has been interpreted, and this is all settled by now.
Indeed it is. And the book talks about the tension between these two schools, these two approaches, in effect. And you have some very conservative, very narrow traditionalist readings that prescribe a very narrow role for women in society, and you have much more progressive, open interpretations. And the book is looking at how those two different schools are interacting in today's modern world and duking it out, in effect, in countries across the Middle East.
We want to focus, because we have a guest here who's very familiar with this work in Afghanistan, on that country, which is, of course, central to U.S. foreign policy right at the moment, along with Iraq and Saudi Arabia and some of the other countries you talk about. But since we have a guest from Afghanistan, let's focus there. And we hear of an almost puritanical interpretation of Islam that informs much of the Taliban movement, which, of course, ruled Afghanistan for many years.
Well, that is absolutely true. You've got a very conservative, very narrow traditionalist perspective in Afghanistan that prescribes a very harsh treatment of women. I mean, the Taliban is really the worst of the worst when it comes to women. But you also have very open and modern and progressive thinkers in Afghanistan today. And unfortunately, both of these sides are really vying for position and control in that country. And women are very much on the front lines of the war that is taking place across these two sides.
Well, let's introduce Sakia Yakupi. She founded and directs the Afghan Institute of Learning, a nonprofit organization that provides health and education services to women and children in Afghanistan. And she joins us today here in Studio 3A in Washington. It's great to have you with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. Hi.
And would any kind of education or health services to women and children in Afghanistan be possible if it were not done in the context of the Quran?
I think that, as Isabel said, and it is possible, but we will not get the profit of it, the benefit of it, because for many, many years, people really, they are right now, especially, they are using Islam as a way to just get the woman to not be educated, not get advanced, and they are using Islam. But in reality, I am so happy and so proud that Isabel book is really a book that for us as a Muslim, it's really introduced the other side of the Islam, that it is really so democratic, so open-minded vision, and is allow us that all of us as a nation, they can look that see how much Islam get advantage to women, that men and women has equal right in education, and women can advance and from education, change their life, change their status by using just exactly as Isabel said, that verses from Quran, and we can really see the impact of education on women, how it changed their life. For example, I can give you an example of it.
Please.
I have been for 20 years working in Peshawar, Pakistan, and working inside Afghanistan and working during the Taliban underground and trying to educate the women of Afghanistan. And I constantly, I have been providing different kind of program from literacy to higher education, but at the same time awareness. And when we provide women's right or human's right workshop for the people of Afghanistan, they are delighted, because what we do, if we come around and says we are going to try to teach you women's right, of course they are not going to accept, because that is a westernized sort of a dialogue. But if we say we are trying to hear Islam says that you have a right in education in such a verses, or Islam gives a freedom for women to really have a position, go outside and work, and Islam allows women to have a business, for example, or Islam allows women to be able to reason with their husband or brother, and here are the quotation. And when we give this kind of workshop, it's amazing to see how it's changed the life of hundreds and thousands of women, and how the women become advanced. And
yes, go ahead.
Thank you. And that is the way that we have seen that all the time, that the advance of women, when they have a proper education, such as trying to look it in the tradition, in the culture, in the religion, and get this all included and according to our religion, which allows us to do that, is no threatening, and everybody wants to learn. And right now in Afghanistan, today when you look at the women of Afghanistan from 8 years ago, is a great change, is a different change. You could see it. I could see the impact of it. Like right now, women are voting, women are going to workforce, women are become a social entrepreneur. Women are doing many, many things because they have been allowed to get education, and this kind of education. Once you provide quality education and you really reason with them, like as Isabel said, ijtihad, and you give them the reason behind it, they really are involved, and also you can just communicate this with men. Even sometimes people are asking me, are you educating only women? But right now we are involving men too, because the men are the one who are really that they said, okay, some rigid men says this is not allowed by Islam. But once we bring them to the classroom and give them the workshop and give them the real quotation from Quran, we interpret it with them, they see it and they are changing, and they are allowing their daughter and wife to come and learn from us.
We're talking about the changing role of women in Islam throughout the Middle East, and specifically in Afghanistan. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, email us talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Jamil. Jamil with us from Olathe in Kansas.
How are you, sir?
I'm well, thank you.
Yes, I was trying to say that, as Hishit said, that Islam is, as I said, it's a universal religion. And in most of the countries where it is practiced, people go by their cultural values, not by the religious values. And in Western area, especially in America and Europe, it is they bring it, they say that he is Muslim and there's an Islam doesn't allow that to do so, which is absolutely wrong. Islam focused on education from the very first day. In the time of Holy Prophet, women used to work. Even Holy Prophet's first wife, she was a businesswoman, and women participated along with the line of men in almost all sort of profession. And that was 1,500 years ago. And in today's, in some country where they do not practice or where they do not allow the woman to go and get higher education, it is not the Islam is stopping them. It is their cultural values, and it's just their which they practice more than the religion, and that's what they do.
That's what they do. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what they do, I will say, in some part of northern Pakistan or Afghanistan. But again, it is wrong to say that Islam did not allow a person, regardless of the gender, not to get higher education.
Let me ask Isabel Coleman to respond to this briefly. We have a short break coming up. But this is an issue you address, this issue of traditional customs versus religious beliefs.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a very good point that Jamil is making, but the problem is that in so many countries around the world, tradition, culture, and religion are conflated. And so you saw, for example, in Afghanistan, there are deep cultural traditions, but the Taliban used Islamic arguments to justify those cultural traditions. And it's much harder to change religion than it is to change culture. When you're doing something that's seen against religion, it's just very difficult to change it. It sort of stops people dead in their tracks. And so that is why women today are using Islamic arguments to fight back on those traditional and cultural aspects of society.
Jamil, thanks very much for the phone call. Isabel Coleman's new book is Paradise Beneath Her Feet, How Women Are Transforming the Middle East. More with her in a moment, and more with Sakina Yakupi of the Afghan Institute of Learning. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In her new book, Isabel Coleman takes us through Saudi Arabia, Iran, Afghanistan, and other predominantly Muslim countries to meet Islamic feminists who are redefining the role of women within the tenets of Islam. You can read about the lengths one group of Somali women went to keep a Mogadishu school functioning through a raging civil war in an excerpt at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Isabel Coleman's book is titled Paradise Beneath Her Feet, How Women Are Transforming the Middle East. Also with us, one of the women she writes about, Sakina Yakupi, who founded and directs the Afghan Institute of Learning, a nonprofit organization that provides health and education services to women and children in Afghanistan, as she mentioned, to men too now. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255, email us talk@npr.org. And let's go next to Fleet. Fleet calling us from San Antonio.
Good afternoon to you, sir.
Good afternoon.
I just returned from Afghanistan about 2.5 weeks ago. I was on a 3-week media embed. And one of the things I noticed pertinent to the discussion going on today is that the Afghani women, through exposure to American women in the military, some of whom are medical, some of whom hold command, some of whom are in food distribution and things like that, the observation I make is that seeing women empowered and holding authority and behaving normally, as we do, in two instances I know of, has had quite an impact on the local populations.
Give us a little bit more of what are you talking about. Go into one of those examples.
Yes, I can. I was standing watching a medevac helicopter discharge child that had been brought in from an injury sustained somewhere out in the field, and I'm not sure it was a military injury. It may have been just an accident, a broken leg or something.
Mm-hmm.
And from once they rolled him on the gurney into the hospital, his parents were there. Ladies took charge of it from start to finish, and then I was lucky enough to see him come out about a week later, and his father decked out in the entire Afghan costume, uniform, you know, their normal clothing, brought this discharge nurse a bundle of roses with his wife standing there nearby in a full burqa, and the American nurse was in her scrubs, and the man presented her this bouquet of roses, and she put her hands to her face, and it was quite a poignant scene.
Hmm. Well, let me ask Sakina Yakupi about that. Any change by looking at other examples?
Well, as you see that, as this gentleman says, that women of Afghanistan are changing. Also men are changing. They are they respect women who are educated. They are really appreciate the women who are educated. If they understand that this woman who are educated is according to our tradition, our religion, and is not a threat to them, and is really their life is changing for better. Their children are healthier. Their family life is better. Their economic status is growing, like they are getting wealthier because they held a job. And so as a result, you could see that really people are happy. And I could tell you that thousands and thousands in through our work, we have seen their life change. And the men are really more sort of becoming like open-minded. Mm-hmm. And they are really joining the women's task because they feel that these women who are not a threat to our culture and religion, they are really 60% of our population. And you cannot ignore 60% of the population. And really, as the previous speaker says, that is Islam allow women. Allow women freedom, allow women education, allow women to really advance. And so, and Hazrat Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was the example of it. And so Hazrat Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, his daughter, as Isabel Coleman is talking in her book about it, is that she was one model, role model for us. We can look at to her, Zainab, Hazrat Zainab, as a role model. So we really, if we go according to our religion, so we must, as a matter of fact, Islam really encourage you to have a better life and have a healthier life and to really get education. So once you do that, of course, the men are reacting to that. And it is a beautiful example of it, that man, how he could bring the flower to the woman, because he could see that how much this woman knowledge helped her child getting better.
Yeah. So listeners should have been lucky enough to see Sakina Yakupi's smile as Fleet was telling that story. Fleet, welcome home, and thanks very much for calling.
Oh, I appreciate it, and I concur with what she said 100%. Thanks much. See you later. Bye.
So long. Let's go next to Nigata. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. In Miami. Go ahead, please.
I'm thrilled to hear what sister gave us information about religion, Islam, but I will still 100% sure that we needed to teach our own children, our own women in Pakistan, what the proper teaching of Islam. Unfortunately, most of the women, including me, when I was a little girl, I read Quran in Arabic, and I was like, I read the Chinese. And my opinion is strongly what she said. I agree with her. God allowed us. We have an equal right according to God, and we are supposed to go study, and we have a God. It's the obligation of a man and a woman to go to school, but unfortunately, when I was a little girl, my mother said girls are born to be married, not to go to college. And I went to college, and I'm 100% sure that we should educate all the women, because unfortunately, 58% of the women are illiterate in Pakistan. And I wish, you know, I can relay this message to whoever is listening. Read Quran, translate it into your native language, because Arabic, it's a prophet language, but we do not understand. And once you have education, you have a power, and you can change the world around. Yeah. Not even Pakistani condition, but the fear all over the world about Muslim people, which I feel ashamed sometimes. And I bleed to my heart when somebody say, oh, Islam is a cruel religion. it's Islam is not cruel. We are the evil and we are the ignorant and we are not very well educated.
Isabel Coleman.
If we are educated, it will change the world, in which I have written a book about it.
Okay. Isabel Coleman, you talk about the importance of teaching not simply by memorization, by rote, but by actually learning how to read and to learn critical thinking.
Yes, Neil, that's a great point. The one of the drivers, I think, of Islamic feminism today is the fact that more and more women are reading the texts for themselves. And as the previous caller just said, that when she was little growing up, she had to read it in Arabic. It was incomprehensible to her. But today, you now have women who are reading the texts, reading the Quran themselves in study groups, with friends, even at their mosque, with their local mullah in their local language, really engaging with the text, trying to understand it better, and trying to understand what it really says and what it really means. And there's much that is progressive and is accommodating for women in the Quran. There are parts of it that are not and that people are struggling with. But there is much that people can take away from the Quran that allows for a much more empowered role for women in society. And I just want to comment on the previous question, too, about role models, about Americans being role models in Afghanistan, which I'm glad to hear that. But I will say that the most impressive role models there are the Afghan women themselves, who have really taken on tremendous personal risk, very public roles. Sakina is one of them. She is running clinics and schools all across the country. People admire her. They look up to her. Hundreds of thousands of women and men have been touched personally by her. And one of the graduates of her schools is a woman named Habiba Sarabi, who is now a governor. She's the only female governor in Afghanistan, in Bamiyan province. And she's a very popular politician who really inspires both men and women across Afghanistan with her personal story.
Thanks very much for the call there from Miami.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And I wanted to ask you, Sakina Yakupi, one of the scenes that Isabel Coleman describes in her book is when you started in Peshawar. This was a great Afghan refugee camp 20 years ago. The first person you approached was the mullah.
Absolutely, yes. When I went there in the refugee camp, and I saw that all these 5 million refugees are in the camp in Peshawar, Pakistan, in different refugee camp, and most of them, as I said, about 60% of them are women. Some of them, about maybe 40% of them are widow, without a husband, with the children sitting there, and they are not doing anything. And these young girls sitting in the camp and not studying and not learning anything. So it was devastating to me, and that was one thing that really I decided at the time, that how can we change their life, and the only way that we could do it through education. And if we want to implement the education at the time, it was the time that even the Mujahideen were against education. So what happened? We went to a mullah and we really said that this is the best way to through the community and through the leader, which is in the time at the mosque. The mullah is the leader of that community. So I went through with my group. We went there, and for months we trained this mullah to be a teacher and to be a teacher how to teach. Of course, he was.
People thought you were crazy.
Absolutely. I mean, they thought I'm out of my mind how a mullah could teach. But you know what? When you have a plan, very organized program, which means teacher training, new methodology, student-centered technique, and teaching critical thinking. And when you train somebody like that, it's everybody get involved. The mullah got involved, the family got involved, everybody want to teach. And as a matter of fact, in a matter of 3 months, from like one tent, we get to 7 tent, and we have 300 students in one compound. And after that, we have, like, in a matter of 1 year, we have 25,000 students in different school. And that was the way it went, and it's picked up from there. And since then, we have trained 18,000 teachers. And as Isabel said, we are not just telling them to read Quran. We teach them how to read Quran when interpretation, and to understand that. And what is Quran says? Quran is all about right, about democracy, about justice, about equality, about advancement. That is the way that Quran teaches us, if we really understand that. If we don't understand and we read in Arabic, we will not be accomplishing anything, and we just follow whatever they say to us. And when they want to abuse us in submissive women in Afghanistan, the way that they abuse them, so they listen, and whatever they said, they listen to them, and that was the way it went. And now you can communicate with the woman, as Isabel said, look at like a woman like Habiba Surabi, and look at like Habiba Surabi, many of them, lawyer, doctor, engineer, right now we have, of course, the situation in Afghanistan is very bad. Poverty is there. People don't have a job. People are really suffering right now. Security is not there. But if you really compare the life of the woman from 8 years ago to now, it's like I can tell you that 90% is changed. Of course, maybe people will argue with me that still people has problem. Yes, we do have problem, because it's not an easy task, and it takes time. It takes time. The way that we took 30 years of this war to people who are devastated, it takes us a longer time to improve our life. But sure enough, by having a guidance like Quran and using Quran as our guidance, and we will have much, much better life, and we will be much happier, because we practice our religion in tradition, and we also educate ourselves.
Sakina Yakupi, founder and director of the Afghan Institute of Learning. Also with us, Isabel Coleman, Paradise Beneath Her Feet, How Women Are Transforming the Middle East is her new book. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Lukiman. Lukiman, am I getting that right?
Yeah.
Go ahead. In Columbia, South Carolina. Go ahead, please.
Yes, my point is this, because everything your guest is saying, everything sounds okay. That's according to Islam. But my point is this. You have to look at it this way. You don't want to get all this education at the expense of your deen, at the expense of what Islam says.
You don't want to get your education at the expense of what Islam says?
Yes, sir, because many of these countries that they're saying it's being colonized by the British or the Western, and the education system is based on the Western system. So, like in Islam, there is segregation of the sexes. But in these schools, they don't have that. So some of the people that oppose some of these children from going to school, it's not because they don't want them to go to school, but because it's about, because of the religion, it's a way of life. It's not just a religion. And she says, your guest says something like, democracy is Islam. It is not. Democracy is the will of the people. Islam is fully submission to the will of Allah. So it's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have people like this, they just read the Quran, but they don't really understand it. And they want to go on shows and start talking all this stuff. You need to understand it. It's a way of life.
We're running out of time here, so let me ask Isabel Coleman to comment on this. I think one of the things that Lukiman is talking about is the overlay of westernized influences in the educational systems of many countries, not just Afghanistan, in the traditional educational systems.
The countries that actually I write about in the book, some of them have never been colonized. I mean, Saudi Arabia, Iran, they've not been colonies of Western powers. And the fact is that their educational system, Afghanistan today, is a really from scratch educational system. And I'm not sure that that colonial influence is really the problem today. I think that in many respects, there are very strong traditions and cultures, as we've been talking about, and that those traditions and cultures have this religious overlay that prevents change. And today, there are people in these countries who want change, and they recognize that the power of the religious establishment is very, very strong, and they have to argue from within an Islamic perspective to push that change forward. And that's what you see happening more and more.
Lukiman, thanks very much for your call. We just have a minute left, Isabel, and getting back to your argument that if it is not within the context of Islam and those beliefs, it is doomed to failure.
Well, maybe that's a little too strong. I think that there are secular people in all of these countries, but and there's secular ways of life, and there's secular education.
But you're right about the next generation being more religious than the current one.
Yes, absolutely. But when you move out of urban areas into the countryside, I mean, Islam is the touchstone of daily life. And if you cannot find ways to promote change that is consistent with people's views on Islam, then you're really trying to push a rock up a hill. And I found this all over the region where I travel. You can meet very westernized, secular people in the cities, and you leave the cities, and suddenly it's like you're going back in time. And you have to, the people who are trying to promote change understand that, and they're really trying to work within the system as opposed to against it.
We'd like to thank our guest, Sakina Yakupi, founder and director of the Afghan Institute of Learning, a nonprofit organization that provides health and educational services to women and children in Afghanistan. She was kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And Isabel Coleman, author of Paradise Beneath Her Feet, How Women Are Transforming the Middle East. You can read more about Mogadishu's so-called kitchen mamas and how they negotiated with warlords to feed thousands of civilians through Somalia's civil war in an excerpt at npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.